Soul, a podcast about all the ways food intersects with our faith, from seed to spade to spoon. I'm Jennifer Baskerville Barrows, the Episcopal Bishop of the Diocese of Indianapolis, here coming to you from downtown Indianapolis. And I've been on sabbatical for four months this year, from May until September. And now I'm back, and Triple S is back. And it's been great anticipating our return, because there are so many great stories to catch up on. And here we go. Brian.
So I'm Brian Sellers-Peterson, and I am sitting in Roslyn, Washington, in the Diocese of Spokane, on the east slope of the Cascade Mountains, on the land of the Yakima people. And it's just great to be here. And I'm especially pleased to introduce Anna Shine, who comes to us from the Diocese of Western North Carolina. And I got to know Anna when she was at Virginia Seminary a number of years ago. She was involved in Cultivate VTS. Then she was a part of a new Episcopal community coaching cohort focused on land and agrarian ministries. And I have just loved some of what we've been able to share over almost the past year with that cohort. Currently, Anna serves as the campus missioner to Appalachian State University in Boone, North Carolina. And she's serves as the missioner for Creation Care and Social Justice at St. Luke's Episcopal Church in Boone, where she's got quite a bit of history that we'll have to dive into. And she studied at Elon University with a major in religious study and a minor in German. So we'll need to know a little bit more about that German minor. But she first received a master's degree in theological studies from Harvard Divinity School before going to Virginia Seminary to prepare for the priesthood. And we're so glad you're with us today, Anna.
So let's get started. Anna, we have a little sense of where you are, but tell us, in whatever way you might want to describe it, where are you rooted?
Yes, thank you so much for having me today. My name is Anna Shine, and I am rooted in the Appalachian Mountains. I'm currently situated in Valley Crucis, North Carolina, which is close to Boone, North Carolina, in land that was historically stewarded by the Cherokee and Watauga tribes in the Watauga River Basin watershed. And what roots me, what grounds me, what makes me rooted? Let's see. I am rooted by the place I am in, by the trees that surround me, by the water that nourishes me. And my dog is here. You might hear noises from him in the background. We like to go on walks and go down near the river and feel the wind blowing through the leaves on the trees and hear the water move over the water. Hear the wind move over the water. I'm grounded by the community that I live in and am surrounded by. This is a community I grew up around. And so it's a joy for me to return home and take what I have gained, bring it back and mix it in. I'm grounded by the soil that surrounds me, that is healing and that is nourishing. And I'm grounded by the roots of the traditions I come from. My mother is German, hence the German minor. And so I wanted to have a piece of that part of my family deep within me and instilled within me. And I am rooted by the Episcopal tradition that I was raised in and the scriptures that form that foundation. And so for me, I think story is what grounds me. And so that's a little bit of mine.
That's beautiful. And I have to say that part of the world is a sacred place for my family. My grandmother, my mother's side, is Eastern Band Cherokee, and they come from Black Mountain in Swannanoa and Nashville. And they sharecropped in that area. And so they knew that soil, and it's a place I've been longing to know. So I can't wait to hear more about your journey from there away and then back. And so can you say a little bit about what it's like to return to this place and such, and to then reroot yourself?
Yes. So to be completely transparent, I was born in Birmingham, Alabama. And then we moved up to these mountains when I was 8. And so I would not be considered homegrown or from here by the peoples who live here. But I did grow up here. And what I found when I first moved here when I was young was that it just felt like home. And I think something deep within me is called to mountains. And that might be some of my father's Irish and Celtic tradition within me, deep within me, that calls me to be a keeper of the trees and surrounded by mountains. And then for my studies, I went to Elon, which is a couple hours away and not situated in the mountains. And what I found whenever I returned home, there was always this exit along the interstate where it would break open and you could see the mountains for the first time in their fullness. And I would always cry when I reached that spot because I knew I was home once I saw that, even though I was still 45 minutes away from my return. But I found it was important also to go away to recognize how deeply the mountains draw me in. And to have kind of that separation to recognize the preciousness and sacredness of it.
I'm probably jumping the gun because I think there's so much here to talk about. But Anna, one of the things that really captivated me was Mary's Garden. And then when you talked about the importance of story, and so I'd like you to talk a little bit about Mary's Garden and storytelling.
Sure. Thank you for that question. So at St. Luke's, where I do serve, we have the Mary Boyer Community Garden. And Mary Boyer was a beloved parishioner at St. Luke's, who was a founding mother of the Blue Ridge Women in Agriculture here in Boone, in the High Country. And she was an incredible human being who really, really cared about other people, and especially other people who did not always have a platform from which to speak or to be heard. She worked a lot with the Latino and Hispanic communities and taught English as a second language. And she had an ability to grow things anywhere and everywhere. So if there was a little bit of grass, you could grow something on that little patch of grass. And unfortunately, she did pass away in 2011 after having lung cancer. And this community garden was formed, and it just became very clear. She had worked in a community garden, and it just became very clear that this garden was going to be named after her. And so this garden, I think, is in its 13th or 14th season at this point. And each year we grow food, and the food that we grow is given back to the community. And I believe we did weigh the food one of the seasons in the past few years. I think it was during COVID, maybe 2021. And this is a very small plot. It's not a huge plot of land, but we were able to give out 1,000 pounds of food in one of the growing seasons, which was amazing. And it all goes back either to the hospitality house, which serves our homeless population, or to the Farm Cafe, which stands for feeding all regardless of means. And it offers organic, made from scratch meals every day for people in the town of Boone. And you pay what you can, or you volunteer if you can't pay, or some people will buy tokens to allow someone else to eat without having to do anything. And we wanted to give to these nonprofits that are doing such incredible work. And so that fits in with everything that Mary stood for. And brought. And it's funny because I didn't realize until much later the idea of a Marian garden, a garden of Mary, and kind of the connection. And this is the Mary Boyer garden. And so I thought that was also quite a beautiful thing. And so when I started working at St. Luke's in July of 2020. I switched from my curacy to this new call. And my first task was to create a Eucharist in the garden space, since we couldn't worship together inside our sanctuary at that point. And so it was really quite a beautiful thing to look at a garden as a canvas, as a way of liturgical space, and how do we make liturgy happen, and what might that look like? And because it's located on the side of a hill and most of my parishioners are older, how do you make it work in a short amount of time when we're all standing, and make it accessible and safe? And so it became a space of prayer and of worship. And so we worship every Wednesday during the growing season. We do a short Eucharist every Wednesday there. So what happened then was we were sharing our ancient story in that space as we were sharing story with each other, gardening and getting our hands in the soil. And what I found was, to me, the liturgy of the word included the work hours before communion began, because we were consulting with and touching and being nourished by the soil, which is part of, I think, in some ways, the word we receive. And then we could go to the table together and bring what we harvested to the table and bless that, so that it could then go out into the world and feed everyone.
Well, that is an exquisite picture. And so I just want to be there. That just sounds so wonderful. And I will confess, as I was preparing to be with you today, I took a look at the video that's up on YouTube, and we'll go into the particulars of how you can find out more about the ministries that you do. But there is that 3.5 minute video about the garden, and it's overlaid with, I think it's you saying the words of the Eucharistic prayer C, which is, for those of you who are not Episcopalian, it's one of the four prayers of Eucharistic prayer in our prayer book that's in regular rotation. And I have just used that Eucharistic prayer on Saturday at our convention, and I love it, but it takes on an entirely different everything when you're actually in creation saying those particular words. And I was knocked off my chair, and I thought, what, how could you ever say this within a building again? It's just, it doesn't sound the same. And so I just love how that, I can imagine how evocative and meaningful that is to worship in that way. I mean, many people may worship in gardens, but that it just seemed it's the only way to do it now. You know, it's beautiful.
Yeah, that will definitely, the link to that video will definitely be in the show notes. And and then you mentioned the Farm Cafe, or what was the name of that?
Yeah, the Farm Cafe, which stands for Feeding All Regardless of Means.
Another awesome story, and we'll get that in the show notes, and we'll probably accumulate some more with the rest of our conversation.
So with this farm cafe, which I love the meaning of the acronym, and I'm just, you said it's just about every day, 5 days a week?
Yeah, I think it's Monday through Friday.
Friday.
Yeah, and it's the lunch meal. Right. So it's one meal. And they've got more programs. I will not have all of the information about it, but I do know that they have more programs that have grown out of it. And so one of those is Farm Full Circle, which I think is where they take leftover food from other places and they will, they'll prepare it and then wrap it and people can then take that home. And so also looking at where's their food waste and can we reduce that as well? So looking at trying to look at whole systems and taking care of the needs of our community.
But this came out of the Mary Boyer Garden effort, right? It's an outgrowth of that or is it separate?
No, it was something that was developed in our community. And I don't have the history in front of me, but it's an organization that exists within our community just down the road from where we are. And so we wanted to support it with the produce that we grow since they do try to do organic meals.
No, that sounds wonderful. Thank you for clarifying that.
Well, it's such a great story. And I want to poke a little further on where worship fits. I really love the you're talking about the part, the word, as a part of gardening. And I find a lot of people I interact with, they really struggle to figure out how do they integrate worship into their garden ministry. Too often I think we start garden ministries and we think a lot about the production and, you know, how much food we can get out to feed people. And then, you know, as it goes on a little along, you know, there's always someone in every project says, well, we're a church garden project. So where does our faith fit into this? And so maybe you could help us a little bit on that note.
Yeah, I can certainly try. As you'll see, if you watch the video, our master gardener, Bill Maher, talks about how there's so much more to a garden than just growing food and giving the food away. People's lives happen there. And it becomes a safe place often for people who just need a place to be. And I think for me, when I think of liturgy, and when we talk about liturgy being the work of all the people, I expand that beyond just the human element. And I think it's the work of all creation in conjunction with us as well, when we set aside and mark that space and that time. And so for me, we do our work hours right before we do garden worship, because to me, that is an incorporation of worship. And it's just part of our preparing ourselves for then coming to the table. And during that time, we learn each other's stories and we learn more about each other. And we share knowledge and we share our joys and we share our griefs. And then in that way, when we come to the table, it really feels like a family meal where we've just gotten to know each other a little bit more. And now we're not sitting, we're standing, but we're gathered together at a table and we're sharing some of the fruit of what we're working towards. And I might get in trouble for this, but we did one year, I took zucchini that we had grown and I made zucchini bread as our communion bread that we used because it was literally something we grew together and it felt important to break that bread with each other. and share that as a way of showing the work that we had done and allowing it to feed us further along the way. But one thing that I think a lot of times people might struggle with is, well, do I need to create something new? How do I do this? What does it look like? And for me, I found I just needed to pray the prayers that we have. And so basically what I've done is, in order to do it in a 20 to 30 minute time frame, I broke down the rubrics and just took everything that is required to make a Eucharist, and included those elements. And then the rest of it is just together praying. Instead of doing a sermon, the work hours were part of that sharing of the word. But also what I've started doing now is having a period of silence where we walk around the garden and we can reflect on what we've heard, but we also each week see how has the garden changed, and use your senses, and what do you smell and what do you see? And if something's able to be tasted, what do you taste and what do you hear? And so incorporating all of our senses into that worship, I think is really, really important, and allows us to experience the worship in a different kind of way. And like you were saying, Bishop Jennifer, the words also start to mean something more almost, or just have more impact when you start to hear it in the context of, oh, I hear that water over there, or, oh, I hear that bird, I see that tree, and I see the leaves changing. But also even as the garden starts to finish and die and we start to close it down, you're noticing these things, and it picks up in the language you use in prayer. And for us, we close our season with a bonfire using the corn stalks that we've dried, and allow the smoke and the ash to bless the space once again.
Well, that's beautiful. And what I love when you talk about the opportunities in worship for folks to listen and to meditate on, and to have, what I was hearing in that is this, that it's actually is a dialogue between us and God and creation, and how God speaks to us through creation. But if you're in that environment, you're actually intentionally listening, and then and reflecting and allowing it to speak, which is, I think, part of why we are in the debacle we are in generally with creation, is that we don't listen to it enough. And so it just sounds like a really beautiful way to worship.
I'm curious about apostate, part of your ministry, and how it fits into what you've been sharing with us.
Yeah, so I serve as the Episcopal part of the Presbyterian Episcopal Campus Ministry at Appalachian State University. And we meet weekly in a place called Third Place. And Third Place is a storefront location conveniently located right next to an Insomnia Cookies, which is just very helpful for attracting people to come see our window and see our location. But when campus ministry is not meeting in that space, it becomes its own ministry where we have other groups that will come and use the space, sometimes art shows, sometimes music shows. And so we have various groups that use the space. And what has been powerful for me is it allows me an avenue to meet people who might not be faith-oriented or faith-based, but who are looking for a place to gather and do the work that they feel called to do. And so we have lots of different groups, but one of the groups arose out of the 2018 Intergovernmental Panel of Climate Change report, the IPCC report, that I think was a very galvanizing moment for a lot of people within the movement around the climate crisis. And this started a climate action group at Appalachian State University, and they needed a place to meet. And eventually they started meeting in third place. And so it's given me the ability to connect with activists who are also seeking a place to be, to recover, and to nourish themselves for the work that they do. And, you know, I think also working with college students, I get to experience firsthand some of the anxieties and some of the just questioning, well, what is the future going to look like? And what is my place in that? And what am I doing? And why am I here? And these are all really, really powerful and important questions. And so it feels like an honor to be able to sit in that space with people who are sincerely questioning, how do we move forward? And how does my faith inform that moving forward? And what might that look like? And so to me, it just feels like a sacred space always to be sitting with people who take very seriously what's going on around them.
Nice. So just thinking about your days and your months and I'm trying to get a sense of the rhythm of your year. There's a time in which the garden's put to bed and that lays fallow and you begin preparing. There's a time when students are not on campus. Those are probably about the same times maybe. And so, well, I'm not sure, but it sounds like there are some stretches when you can really begin to dream and create and think about the next planning season or the next academic year. And can you tell us, like, what is that like for you to be? And then there's a liturgical year. There's a lot of ways in which, you know, the year doesn't ever let up. But I do wonder whether there are some natural different rhythms. And maybe I'm thinking about sabbatical time that, you know, sort of let things lie and you dream a bit about what's to come.
Yeah. Well, so I've recently come to the conclusion that there is no such thing as not a busy season.
Yeah, that's true.
in anything and anywhere. Yeah. And so what I've come to realize is that it's really about cultivating within myself that rhythm of taking the time and the rest. And I think that's why, you know, our own first creation narrative with Sabbath being the culmination of creation is just such an important reminder to always come back to the first full day of humanity was rest. And what does that mean? And what does that look like? And especially how does that look like in terms of what you were talking about pausing and listening? Because I think a lot of times we dive into the let's do the thing before really sitting and listening and saying, what is it? What is it? But so for me, the rhythm, yeah. So the academic calendar is, you know, August to May, and the garden calendar is about April to October. And so there's overlap in there, which is great because we do service projects in our campus ministry. And so about twice a year, I can get the students in the garden with me. And some of them then want to come back and just work in the garden, because I do think it is a healing space. And during the summer, things academically kind of go to rest, and that's when the garden really, really needs attention. And, so that grows. And this past summer, we also, offered for the first time, the Wild Wonder curriculum, Vacation Bible School, which comes out of Aroca International. I'm not sure if I'm pronouncing that correctly. And so that was wonderful. And so that incorporated the younger children ages 4 to 11. And then they were excited about the garden, and we did Eucharist in the garden. And so just trying to get all of the generations mixed together in all of that. But so, yeah, I think there's always something. And so when I can find a space, I find a space to dream. And sometimes that's in January and sometimes that's in June. But I think more importantly for me is I've been trying to practice focusing my attention on different things in different seasons. And so one of my favorite saints is Hildegard of Bingen. And so when I think about kind of her and kind of the seeking for equilibrium and balance, when you think of the kind of medicine that was practiced with the four humors and the tied into the elements of creation. Well, so in this season, maybe I want to focus on where's the wind right now? And in the next season, where is there heat? Where is there fire? Where is there light? And maybe the next season, where is there grounding? Where is there soil? And then the next season, where is there water? And switch it around so that in each season, maybe a different element is the focus of my intention and attention. Because I think so often in the hurriedness, in the busyness, which I admit is just part of my own brain, constantly thinking and working and busy, 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 I miss a lot of things. And so trying to find how do we create those spaces for imagination and dreaming just within us.
Thank you for that. And I get it. I mean, I was having a fantasy moment thinking, oh, maybe Anna's figured out how to just go with the rhythm of the seasons. And there's this wonderful time in the wintertime when you just get to, you know, meditate and go through, you know, catalogs of amazing vegetable varieties. And I mean, I've always longed for that time, but you're right. It's hard, but I think you have a better chance at it given you're again, paying attention to the rhythms in a different way of creation. And so just love that. But I'm with you in the struggle there.
And, you know, cause winter is when Christmas and Epiphany. And so part of it is the church calendar then comes in where the other calendars have maybe gone down, but there's a beauty in that as well, because it means that other parts are resting, and maybe in that resting, something percolates in that little hibernation space.
It's great.
Anna, I really love, you know, sort of the ministry in place in Boone at Alapa State, but you also, you know, work for a whole diocese. And when you were talking, I remembered that you were went to Copt last year. You were part of the Episcopal Church's delegation to Sharm el-Sheikh for this international meeting on the environment and climate. And I'd just like you to talk a little bit about how your local stuff that's so rich and layered informs your diocesan work and your church-wide larger call to ministry.
Yeah. So yes, I was part of the virtual delegation last year to COP27. And I am honored that I'm also part of the virtual delegation for this year, which is coming very soon in the next couple of weeks. And yes, so what my experience with COP27 and Sharm el-Sheikh was that a lot of what I was hearing from I tried to focus on kind of the global South, the small island nations, voices that aren't usually amplified in our news. And so I was trying to hear that voice a little bit more, and of our youth especially. And what I kept hearing from those sessions that I went to was the importance of doing action in your local context. And that's not to say don't do the church-wide, don't do the national, don't do the international, but do not forget about the local in the midst of doing the larger global work, and that it requires all of it. It's one of those both ands. We need to work locally just as we're working on the expansive. And that was really powerful and also really helpful, because I think a lot of times we feel like we have to do something really grandiose and massive. And a lot of times all it takes is starting with one small thing. And if we can do that one small thing well, and then start building on that small thing and continually building on it. And even if you're not doing it well, if you're trying and you're putting your intention in trying, and with an openness and a willingness to learn, a lot of this work for me is really just about having a sense of humility. And I've been reflecting actually a lot on the word humility, because the etymology, it comes from humus, and humus brings us back to the ground. It's in our ground. I'm sorry, I'm taking a soil science class right now, so I'm really.
Oh, but this is all the things. Like, this is, you're exactly right. Keep spinning this out.
Yeah, and to me, what I've been reflecting on though is, because a lot of times I think people associate humility with like making yourself small or less than, or the idea of humiliation. That it can be a negative thing. And for me, what I reflect on lately is the way in which our second creation narrative, it emphasizes being created from the ground, out of the ground, from the Adama. And it's not just Adam who's created out of the ground. It's the trees that are created out of the ground, and it's the birds, and it's the animals. And that refrain keeps showing up, out of the ground. And so when I reflect on humility, I reflect on coming back to the ground that is the leveling, equalizing space. And so it's not about being less than or something being greater than, but it's about actually being on the same level. And that is really helpful for me. And so entering into these spaces with a level of humility that says, I'm going to try something and I might fail, and I might fail spectacularly. And in the process, I might learn something and I might be able to grow from there. And I have other people in these spaces who might know more, who can help me learn, and who I can learn their stories, and they'll bring me along. And then maybe I hear the stories over here and I recognize a thread, and maybe I can connect those stories so that we can come together and work on this all together. So I don't know if I answered your question. I got distracted.
I'm just laughing because I was going with this, as you spoke, I thought, oh, the ways in which you're talking about inviting people into holy curiosity, and how that is a tremendous gift in a world where it's too easy to just be diminished and not curious and insular. And your ministry just sounds incredibly expansive. And so we're talking about these other places where the ministry that you do takes place, which is indeed expansive, but it really is this grounded expansiveness as you talk about it. It's really beautiful.
We could keep going. This has been such a great conversation, but we've got one more really important question we always ask. But we need to know, what is the dish or the meal that makes you sigh with cooking comfort? You have to choose one.
Oh, that's such a good question. The meal that makes me sigh with comfort. Today, I will say that today, that meal.
Okay. Fair enough.
Today, that meal is spaghetti. It reminds me of childhood, spaghetti with red sauce. Especially if it's sauce that's made from tomatoes that I got to grow, that makes me just like, just, there's nothing tastes better than something that you have grown, yourself. Yeah. So, and for me, spaghetti is such a come to the table, family gathering, we're going to get messy in the process and it's okay. And we'll still love you with that red stained mouth that you have leaving the table. So that's my answer for today.
Well, that's a beautiful way to, yeah. I have an image of like mouths with all of the spaghetti stains around, you know, kind of like, cause you're in it. And so that's a beautiful,
beautiful. Yeah, that's a picture I'm going to carry for the rest of the day. Thank you.
Well, you're right, Brian. I don't know where the time went, but this is a wrap for today's Spade Spoon Soul, AKA Triple S. And we'll remind you that if you want to know more, you can find us on the Spade Spoon Soul Facebook page, or you can email us at spadespoonsoulpodcast@gmail.com.
And so I want to thank our producer, the multi-talented Derek Weston, and we're going to be plugging his book the rest of the fall into the new year. It's called Just Kitchen. There's got to be a spaghetti recipe in there, but thanks to Derek for making this podcast so wonderful. And I also always got to shout out Jay Seidbaum because he did the original artwork for our podcast. Hey, Jay, we need an update, by the way. And always got to thank my brother-in-law, Ryan Lee, for the wonderful music that brings us in and takes us out.
Well, thank you so much, Anna, for being with us. Folks, don't forget to check out the show notes to find out more about her ministry and her great garden and ministry on campus there in Western North Carolina. And so, folks, until next time, we hope that you will find ways to connect your soul to your spade or spoon or both. Take care.